I'm here talking to Kendall.
I'm here talking to Annie, and today we're talking about Rock Terrio and the Anthill Kids Part 1. Content warning is for child death. Come join us on Patreon. We have a general support tier as well as a tier that gets you 3 bonus episodes a month. You can follow us on Instagram at tellnoonepodcast or send us an email at tellnoonepod@gmail.com. Sources are in the show notes. Everything's alleged, but this is definitely Tell No One. Enjoy.
Go ahead and freak me out.
Okay. Rock Terrio. So it is Quebec. We're going to have a lot of French Canadian names. I'm going to anglicize them because it's just better for everybody if I do that. So he was born May 16th, 1947 in Quebec, Canada, one of 8 children. His parents were very religious, his dad mostly, and he was part of an extreme Catholic group called the White Berets that basically wanted Catholic world domination and, in the same vein, you know, very anti-Semitic.
I mean,
it goes without saying.
If you want to dom the world with God.
Right.
Or with
Jesus.
Yeah.
So every Sunday, his father, Hyacinthe, would make all 8 children go door to door asking for donations for the White Beret cause. And Rock thought this was very, very embarrassing, and he starts to really resent the Catholic Church.
I would be.
It is embarrassing.
Yeah, you're right.
Dad was physically abusive, maybe. The thing about cult leaders is that they make up most of their like origin story.
Well, they have to make it. I am not a normal man. I am
of God. Look what I've overcome. Yeah. Like all this shit. So he wrote memoirs that were all pretty much made up and talked about his dad being pretty abusive. But I'm sure he was. But I bet he just amped it up a little bit.
I mean, I think that in general, if we're like the dad might have been hitting them, bare minimum, not growing up in a good fucking environment.
And like late 50s, early, like it's safe to say he probably was.
He'd pop you.
Yeah. So he also wrote a story in his memoir of when he was a kid. He was walking in the woods when he came face to face with a mama bear and her 2 cubs. The mama bear took him in as one of her own, and he spent the afternoon living with the family as a bear.
The afternoon.
He also said he had mystical powers. He would heal neighborhood kids' broken bones and teeth. He could also castrate animals without shedding any blood.
Why would you?
Like on the farm. Castrate a bull or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Well,
by the way, no, you can't.
No, you can't. No, you can't. I'd like to be clear that this is all shit he made up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Duh. So he also had an enormous penis, unfortunately, I have to say that. And which does kind of like, he will like bring that up as like a point of him being a very special guy, distinguishes him from other people. He drops out of school in 8th grade. He's like, I'm too smart for this. And he becomes like a big, burly, big bearded Quebecois
mountain man.
Mountain man, exactly. And okay. Honestly, the woman, she can't get enough.
Do you ever watch like Russia TikTok? But they're like,
no.
They're like chopping timber.
Yeah.
And like throwing
axes.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. He's like in like the flannel. You know what's going on here.
I do.
He's also very, very charismatic.
He really had it all.
He had it all. And it like, you'll be like, wow. And he knew what to do with it. He grabbed the attention in a room. Like women were very into him, like sexually, and guys like liked his stories and his sense of humor. 1967, he meets a woman named Francine and they get married. He builds them a house in the woods. They have 2 children. He's working at a fire department doing inspections. Normal shit.
I mean, building him their home.
I mean, 1971, he is having like stomach problems, like ulcers. So he has to have surgery to remove parts of his stomach. And then he has to have a second surgery. But between these surgeries, he really like dives into medical textbooks and like learns all the steps to the procedure and is kind of being like a backseat driver during the second surgery and like tells them how they should be doing it.
Mm.
So after the second surgery, he's still having like major cramps and pain, and they diagnose him with dumping syndrome.
And with that, the illusion
is shattered.
Not my dream man having
not my dream diagnosis.
Not the sexiest thing you could have.
So this, he has dumping syndrome.
Hold on. Okay.
Hold for laughter in the audience.
He has dumping syndrome. So he has like stomach pain kind of all the time, mm-hmm. which is miserable. It leads him to be a little like hypochondriac-ish. He's always like, cancer's knocking on my door. Like he, it also gives him like a YOLO moment where he's like, I gotta seize the day. And this is when things really start to pop off.
Okay.
He quits his fire department job to sell beer mugs at flea markets.
And that is your dream?
And that's his dream. And he starts to be a little freaky sexually. He used to make his wife dress in long dresses, but now he's requesting mini skirts.
I'd like to make a request.
He also asked his in-laws if he could create a nudist colony on their farm. They say no.
Mm-mm. We aren't going to die right. tomorrow.
No,
we
you.
Have to look at everybody tomorrow morning.
He dabbles in some local politics, doesn't really work out, blah, blah, blah. And then he stops taking his pain meds for his stomach issues and just starts drinking heavily.
I thought you were going to go with morphine.
No, that's the Kurt Cobain route, kind of. Mm-hmm. He just starts drinking a lot. Yeah, and that will like be a big problem for everyone.
What year are we in?
Early 70s.
I don't know why that we're like 1910.
No, it's scarily modern.
Okay. Oh, he's born in like the 40s.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. We meet
Giselle Tremblay. She grew up in a pretty scary and abusive household. Her father would like ingrain in her that when she grew up, she would be better off obeying whatever her husband said, unlike her mother. And like, then she wouldn't have any problems. So primed for a cult leader to come in and swoop her up.
I mean, yeah.
Her first relationship was with a man named Robert, who was a pretty bad alcoholic. She tried to drink as much as he did, but she ended up with burned intestines.
Oh my God, can't hang.
Can't hang at all. They move to Montreal, where he starts robbing banks, but then she leaves him. That's the final straw. Mm. Giselle and her sister get an apartment together, and she starts dating a guy named Dave. But one day, her and her sister are getting cocktails in the bar at the Holiday Inn. Mind your business. And they see Rock there selling his beer mugs. They start seeing each other, and he's like love bombing her. He's writing her love letters. He's complaining about her still seeing that guy, Dave.
You're married, brother.
She doesn't know that yet.
Yeah, but like, what are you complaining about?
He's crazy. One night she lets him sleep over and she's like, are you married? And he's like, yes, but my wife is sleeping with other people and I have cancer. So she quits her job to spend the summer with him selling beer mugs at like fairs. He also just starts doing like weird bits and pranks in public.
I hate a prank.
For example, he collaborated with a steakhouse management.
Not collaborated.
Well, he like gave him the heads up because they kind of have to play a part or whatever. So he stumbles in pretending to be drunk and homeless, walks up to someone's table and grabs their steak and puts it in his pocket. And then the manager came out and said, it was a joke. And their dinner was comped.
Okay.
That's his pranks.
Okay.
Giselle is loving this. She's
how are you loving that?
She is loving it. Loving it.
Okay, man.
She is completely dedicated to him and he quickly abandons his first wife and Giselle moves in with him. He starts diving into more religion. He's reading the Bible. He is like, I hate Catholicism. He also is like, Giselle, look, I discovered some really cool passages in the New Testament that are all about women being very submissive to men. What do you think about this?
I think my dad primed me for it.
Yeah. And she's like, uh-huh.
Okay.
So he gets sucked into the Seventh-day Adventist church, which is blah, blah, blah. They're doomsday stuff. They think end of the world's coming. Mm. We've got the saved and the damned, you know, very restrictive lifestyles.
They can't have
anything
fun.
Anything fun. Very high control group, perfect for a little cult breeding ground. He loves it.
Kind of like David yeah. Koresh, like picking a branch of Christianity that are already a little whacked.
Mm-hmm.
Not whacked, but
whacked.
Very highly controlled.
Yeah.
And being like, I could pivot that really quickly into a full-on cult.
Yeah. That's what he does. So he also loves that it's at odds with with Catholicism. So he's like, his father, who he hates, and all of them are the damned ones, and he'll be the saved one. So he's like, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
He quits drinking and smoking and stops eating meat, which is like an Adventist rule. He gets a leadership role within the church because he's such a good recruiter. He's like selling literature, and he becomes the top seller in the province like pretty quickly.
Very Avon of him.
Yes. Yep. Door to door.
Mm-hmm.
Giselle. Nope. Giselle. Giselle. That's right, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Giselle is also baptized into the faith. They're working together to spread the good word. He soon gets put in charge of a therapeutic program that they run, which is a 5-day stop smoking course. And he starts to like hone in on like new converts. They're in their late teens, early 20s. He's getting a lot of attention and admiration from them. And soon enough, the four people move in with him and Giselle.
No.
We've got Solange Bouillard, who also had an abusive childhood. Chantal Labrie. She got mono and then became really weird into like health and vitamin stuff. So like that's kind of why she's here. We've got Nicole Ruel. And then Francine Laflamme, she brings in her friend Maurice and Josie. Then we've got Claude Ouellette, that's a man, and Jacques Fisset, also a man. This is what we've got going on.
Okay.
There will be a lot of fucking people. I'm going to try to keep it straight.
I don't care.
Right.
The
main ones, you'll remember their names, but there's a lot of in, like some people leave, they come back, like I can't keep up with
cult
all that. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
The idea of like, I enjoyed my 5-day retreat. Now can I move in with you?
Yeah.
What a fucking leap, dude.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, not unwell to make that leap, but like, you don't have a lot going on in your own life.
You're searching.
You're a wanderer.
You're searching for something.
Yeah.
So now he has 6 women and 2 men living in his apartment with Giselle.
My apartment.
My apartment. Mon appartement, yeah.
Mon appartement.
Giselle's like, I don't know.
Why are they here?
Yeah, I don't know that I love this. She's doing all the housekeeping and cooking while they're all like giving each other massages.
Yeah, they're being what you imagine like a 19.
Gross stuff.
They're not showering a lot.
No.
Oh, I don't fucking like that shit. Everybody get on a routine. Everybody like, we need a routine in life, people.
Yeah.
We can't be like all laying all over each other all day.
Group massages. That's not a joke. That's what's going on.
I'm not enjoying it.
She would later say that she like saw these women falling in love with him like right before her eyes.
Yeah.
When she starts to express doubt about this, like, is this so fun? He tells her if she truly believed and loved God, she would open her home to these new converts. So she does. Gabrielle joins. She was recently fired from a nursing job for accidentally killing a patient by giving them the wrong drug. She's certainly searching for something. She started using drugs and stripping, but she met him at a stop smoking retreat. So she's like cleansing or whatever. So it's summer 1978. The summer is winding down, and all of these young followers are like mostly enrolled in college. So it's like time to go back to school. And he's like, hell no. Like, I want you to stay forever. So he's like, guys, the end of days are coming. Christ is coming. So like, why would you waste your time in college classes? And they're like, yeah, all right. That makes sense.
Why would I want you to leave? You adore me.
Yeah, of course. We're still going to the stop smoking clinics. We're still recruiting, always selling.
I'm on.
Yep. Always be selling. We recruit Jacques Guiguerre and Maurice Grenier. They come in. We're working on the clean living, spiritual development, prepping for the doomsday. But now it's time to step it up, and we got to go further into isolation. We can't be around other people. We got to take it to the woods. So he establishes them in Saint Marie, which is about 65 kilometers south of Quebec City. And here they open the, quote, healthy living clinic, which is an alternative medicine venue where you could get organic foods, literature to help you cure any ailment, and all that shit. And then, of course, we got uniforms. The women, he insists all of them wear ankle-length pullover tunics. I think later he trades it in for a wrap dress, but
at this point we've got the all over.
An ankle length tunic. Can you fucking picture that, dude?
Yeah.
What a Victorian thing to do. How do you even like me in that?
It's so weird.
An ankle length tunic. I've never even thought about that.
It's just a tent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mean like
a potato sack?
Or like a thing we could all make. We could all
It's pretty
that.
Easy to sew. Yeah. He's wearing a dark brown robe, similar looking. He also He also tells the woman that bras are tools of the establishment. Argue with him. He also broke Francine Laflamme's glasses because he said they were a technological crutch and her eyesight
and not that hot to me
and kind of school marmish. And her eyesight could be fixed with his healthy diet. We've got another person. We got Leo Marc Fauché. He sold all of his worldly possessions to fund the clinic and move in with his wife and child. Da, da, da. We've got all the women except Maurice Grenier competing for Rock's attention. She doesn't really care about him that much. She's kind of like, I came with my husband. I'm not that into this, but I'm here, I guess. So eventually, Giselle becomes very concerned that she might lose Rock to one of the other girls and takes the initiative to propose to him herself.
Oh, hon.
A week later, he agrees and they are married on January 8th, 1978 at an Adventist church in Montreal. On the way home, the group piles back in a van for the 5-hour drive. Rock joking with all the other girls all the way home in the truck between two ladies, while Giselle cried on a mattress in the truck bed for the whole drive outside.
What?
She wasn't allowed in the bed of she was in the bed of the truck.
Back there alone crying?
Yeah. Get in the back, Giselle. Not enough room in the cab.
On her wedding day?
Yeah. She believes now that he only married her to look good to the Seventh-day Adventists, because at this point they're starting to think he's a little dangerous. Mm-hmm. And he's like, if I marry this, like if I do more of a normal thing, they'll think I'm less cultish.
Well, yeah, it would be like, I'm not living with a bunch of random women.
I'm married.
My wife and I have taken in a bunch of young people.
Exactly. So she's like realized that that's kind of what it was. And the church is not convinced. The pastor tries approaching the parents of many of the girls and tries to convince Giselle to leave Rock. That doesn't work. The police are actually like called and sent there, but they're all like, I'm here and I'm happy about it. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
March of 1978, Geraldine Auclair was admitted to the Healthy Living Clinic. She had been undergoing treatment for leukemia in Quebec City and things were going well, but her husband was obsessed with Rock and brought her there. Rock convinced her husband to let him visit Geraldine in the hospital, where he got in a loud argument with the doctors over her treatment, particularly the amount of drugs they were giving her. And he convinced her husband to check the 38-year-old cancer patient out of the hospital and into his clinic.
I hate that he even could.
So his treatment for leukemia was grape juice.
Fuck off.
And organic food. Huh. So Geraldine died of leukemia at the clinic. Rock told his followers that he had gone into her room and kissed her and she had awoken from death. But that in the end, he like let her die again because, quote, when God wants people, he takes them. It was her time.
Are you telling me you are able to bring people back to life?
Yeah, it was her time to go. She died twice.
But I could if I wanted.
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
So during the same period, the parents of a 19-year-old multiple sclerosis victim, Gabrielle Nadeau, placed her under the care of Rock, who they had met at an anti-smoking workshop. We've got two Gabrielles. This Gabrielle N is the MS one.
Okay.
Okay. So in April 1978, Rock is voted out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He doesn't care. And his next move was to marry some more followers together to each other.
Oh.
In spite of the fact that not only did he lack any authority to perform marriages, his followers had not expressed any interest in getting married to each other.
Okay.
Claude Ouellette was paired with Solange Boyard, Jacques Fizet with Nicole Ruel. Solange invited her parents to the ceremony, and they came just to show, I guess, like that they're still supportive of her if she ever wanted to leave. Mm-hmm. And they reported that Rock's ceremony was not what they expected.
His rambling speech stressed the woman's role of subservience to the man, and her parents sobbed throughout the whole ceremony.
Oh my God. Well, if you loved your daughter...
She's lost. Like, she's not leaving.
Okay.
That spring, Giselle's pregnant and is feeling rejected by the lack of attention Rock has given her since they got married. So she tells him either he break up the commune and tell them to find new places to live, or she would move in with her father. Rock's answer was to punch her in the face and forbid her to leave the room for 2 days.
Oh, no.
It's beginning.
I mean, yeah, if you are like building a whole thing off of like women or nothing.
Yeah. In June 1978, we're facing some challenges. We've got outstanding debts. We have police surveillance ever since the cancer patient died on his watch.
You can't pretend to be a medical thing.
No. Oh, he does big time. So he loads them all into their vehicles and we set out. And we are just wandering around until we can find somewhere to live. Oh, he says the end of the world is coming on February 17th, 1979. So we have to go find some place to live.
Mm-hmm. Until then?
Until then. On July 9th, 1978, they hiked for 2 days until they found an isolated hill beside a small body of water. Rock named the mound Eternal Mountain, and this is where they made their home. It's a 4-hour walk to the nearest road.
Mm-hmm.
They began construction on a large communal cabin. They worked at least 17 hours a day clearing the land.
How do you work that hard?
They've got like God's will inside them or something.
Okay.
Jacques and Claude hack at the ground with a shovel and pickaxe, working all summer to dig a well. He's rationing the food, and if anyone complained about anything like hunger, he would restrict their rations. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
He's also depriving them of sleep. Classic. His stomach pains and cancer prevented him from participating in building anything.
Are you joking?
He just had to sit and tell them what to do. He's not working. No, he has cancer. And he's God. And he's working on them, you know, telling them that everyone who's not here is an oppressor and is of the devil and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Including their families, of course. And here we go. Next step. Giving you different names. He's doing weird controlling shit, like telling Francine that she's very overweight, even though they're all very malnourished, just to like fuck with her. And he renamed her
Fatty McFatpants.
Close. Hogla.
Oh, Hogla.
Hogla.
Fuck you.
He became Moses, but also everyone called him Pappy, and Giselle is Mammy.
Mm-mm.
They're also collecting welfare checks from everyone, so they have like a monthly income of $1,400 Canadian dollars. So we've got some people leaving. Yolande leaves, claiming her passport had expired. She has to go back to France. Sorry. Leo-Marc Fauché, who sold all of his worldly possessions, leaves with his wife and child. Rock does not stop them. He lets everyone go, but he makes it clear to everyone remaining, like, the devil got them. Like, they're mm-hmm. evil, the devil got them, they succumbed, all that.
Mm-hmm.
He's also making everyone do, like, confessions, getting all their deepest, darkest secrets. And he's not allowing them to speak about any happy memories from their past, like their life before this. Everything that came before the commune was of the devil. So Giselle goes to Rock and says, all these unmarried women are so unhappy and lonely. And he's like, you know what?
They need me.
I'll take one for the team and I will sleep with all of them. Okay. And now he's like, and it was Giselle's idea. And she's like, what?
Yeah, I'm sure she meant like we should get more men in here.
Yeah.
But not, I didn't hear it that way.
That's not what I heard. So this hurts Giselle's feelings. And she...
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this is hurting my feelings, frankly. And she fled from the cabin, but he pulled her down and like strangled her. And that was the end of that.
Mm, my God.
And now he is declaring all of the commune marriages other than the one between himself and Giselle void. And now he's marrying the women to himself. With the one exception being Marie Scrignier, she's never been into him. She won't do it.
I'm not going to push the issue.
No.
Okay.
And now he's completely abandoned the Adventist diet. He's eating meat. He's eating junk food. He is, quote, prostituting Gabrielle to a local grocer for milk, meat, and cheese. And he starts drinking again after being sober for 2 years. The drinking is when things are like really crazy. He begins to deliver long, rambling, drunken sermons. And if anyone fell asleep during these, he would smack their head with a 4-inch club.
Oh, he'd club them.
He'd club them. When Maurice Grenier is pregnant, one morning she eats 2 more pancakes than Rock had allocated to her. He punches her in the side and breaks 2 of her ribs.
Okay, yeah. I think we're with a madman.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
In Canada.
Fuck.
A favorite punishment of his would be to force someone to strip naked and stand in the snow for hours.
We're punishing all the time?
All the time. It's like his number one thing.
Okay. Okay.
His thing is that God is punishing you and I'm just the vessel. And like, you are actually lucky. Like, the more you're punished, like, the more godly you become. So they start thanking him for this. And like bragging about being the most abused.
Okay.
Here is a letter that Hogla wrote him.
I wish you wouldn't call me Hogla.
She signed it Hogla.
Oh, no. I am Hogla.
It says, "Hello, Pappy. I'm writing about what you said on the subject of nutrition. It is very true that I nibble.
Oh, Hogla!
A damnable fault, which I will never again repeat. The thought of ingesting such a large quantity of food in so little time discourages me, even if I work outside the entire day without eating. I ask that you forgive me. If it is stealing, I did not realize it. It is this fault which causes my plumpness. I do not want to be a fat and plump servant. That is too ugly next to the man that you are. I don't know what to think about everything and the meaning of my actions. I only know that I will not repeat them, and I don't speak lightly. I wish to be a true servant to you, my master, alert, vigorous, with a clear and lively spirit, and well-balanced to serve you every moment of my life. I have a long way to go. Thank you, Pappy. I love you, Hogla."
I wish to serve you every moment of my life.
Hogla.
Oh, Hogla.
Oh, Hogla, honey.
You know what? I've completely forgotten her real name.
It's Francine. Hogla kind of rolls off the tongue.
You meant that?
It's sad because like another girl's new name was like Rachel. Okay, so we've got babies. Like, we're having babies.
Yeah, we're not like...
No.
On the pill.
Absolutely not. A lot of them are his, but the ones that aren't, he treats like very, very badly. He made Maurice Grenier roll her 6-month-old naked in the snow when he wouldn't stop crying. So Maurice is like, "I think it's time for us to go, maybe." But Jacques instructs Jacques. No. Rock instructs Jacques, Maurice's husband, and the father of the baby, to cut off one of her toes with an axe. When he balks, Rock grabs the axe and threatens to cut off all of her toes himself unless he does it.
Oh my God, we're in hell.
So reluctantly, Jacques takes the axe and severs one of Maurice's little toes.
We have to fucking go.
We don't go.
We don't go?
No one leaves. Like,
you
ever.
Chopped off her toe.
Yeah.
Get your fucking rucksack.
Go. Start walking. Start hoofing. Get that baby and a baby Bjorn and hit the fucking road. Hit the road, baby. Yeah. So the Quebec City newspaper publishes a story on the group titled, quote, "They are happy and free to leave if they wish."
Come on.
Which referred to Rock as the group's spiritual father. And included quotes from an interview with former member Jacques Fizet, who had fled, in which he stated the group was democratic. It's all good.
Well, Jacques, you left a while ago. Mm-hmm. We've taken a turn.
So 4 days after they published this story, police officers go down to Eternal Mountain and arrest Rock for obstruction of justice. And he was ordered by the court to undergo psychological evaluation at a hospital. The director of the hospital where he was confined began referring to him as Moses, his, like, fake name, and expressed his scorn for the public that they had reflexively assumed that just because Rock had a different lifestyle, he was crazy. What if society's the crazy one?
Mm-mm.
So he was released from the hospital early. judged fit to stand trial for obstruction of justice and given a 1-year suspended sentence. The media began to portray him as a gentle mountain man that had run afoul of a prejudiced capitalistic society.
I'm not doing all that. I'm really not doing that.
That comes up a lot. A lot of people are like, leave them alone. They're just living a different lifestyle.
No.
So a new man, Guy Veer, joins the commune. He had undergone treatment for depression at a hospital, the same hospital that had declared Rock mentally sound. After passing like the first exam, he's permitted to stay at the commune in a storage shed away from Rock and his true family. He has to go through like a probationary period, mm-hmm. I guess. He would get a small wood stove, a case of 24 bottles of home-brewed beer, 2 hens, 1 rooster, and 1 meal a day. His job, in addition to his normal responsibilities of chopping wood, storing rations for winter, and continuing construction on Moses's Rock's growing wood cabin palace, would be to babysit the group's 3 non-Rock Terrio children. Samuel Giguere, age 2, Miriam Giguere, age 4, and Simon Ouellette, age 2, son of Solange and Claude.
The idea of, like, we don't know you, you can't even come into our home, but here are the children.
Here are the non-Rock children.
The children we don't care about.
He thought of them as animals. The non-him children. And he didn't even like his children that much. He didn't like children. They just...
He didn't like people.
They were just happening because he was having sex with a bunch of women.
Yeah.
It was okay. Like a consequence that he was like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
On March 23rd, 1980, Rock is hosting a party because his 2 sons from his first marriage, Rock Jr. and Francois, 12 and 10, were coming to stay with their father on the commune like for the summer. And Guy Veer, of course, is not invited to the party. He's still on his probation and he's looking at the other children. He's watching them. So there's 2 versions regarding what happened that night. The official version is the one that was given in court by Rock and most of the other commune members. So according to this version, baby Samuel was crying that night and kept Veer awake. So Veer lost his temper and started screaming at the child to be quiet. Then, picking the 2-year-old up by the throat, he punched the child's face 5 or 6 times. The next day, Rock discovered what had happened and placed Samuel under the care of Gabrielle, who was the former nurse. So she, like, did some of the medical stuff. And allegedly, the baby's head was flopping around on his neck and his penis had swelled up. So Rock took a pair of scissors and after sterilizing them in alcohol, lanced the baby's penis to permit urine to flow out. And the next morning, the baby was dead.
Yeah, horror. I don't know. You were right about the horror.
Yeah.
That much trauma happening to that tiny little body.
Unbelievable.
I don't know, man. Drop a bomb on them?
Drop a bomb on them.
I don't want to drop a bomb on them. I don't want to be too American about it, but all I can think to do
is carpet bomb them. So, according to Giselle, though, she has a different story. According to her, Samuel's face was bruised on the morning of the 24th, like when they woke up, but he wasn't like flopping around.
Mm.
However, Rock decided the child needed to be circumcised. So he used the 94% ethanol solution to do more than sterilize the razor. He poured it into a rubber bulb, which he then like fed to the baby as like a anesthetic, but gave him too much and he died by alcohol poisoning.
Oh my
Either
fucking
way,
God.
Yeah.
Either way, what a horrible end to a short little baby life.
Right. After hearing about her baby's death, Maurice Grenier just went back to work. I mean, they're like totally crazy.
Yeah, they are.
At dinner, Rock suggested they burn the baby's remains, and they all agree. So Claude does the honors, and then life goes back to normal. For 6 months, everything goes smoothly for the commune, but one night in September, drunken Rock becomes angry with Guy Veer for something that no one remembers and decides that he should stand trial for his crime of the baby thing in March. He appoints Jacques, the baby's father, to be the judge. Mammy, Giselle, would be the prosecution. Claude, the lawyer for the defense. Gabrielle is the coroner. And
what's going on? This is a show trial.
This is the sickest show trial I've ever seen. And Rock and his other six wives would be the jury. The trial lasted for an hour and the verdict was unanimous. Not guilty by reason of insanity.
Not a complicated verdict. That would be fun, though.
A mock trial?
That would be fun.
But Rock is not satisfied with this decision.
Mm.
He explained that in the hierarchy of the group, Veer was a slave. But if he undergoes castration, he would become a eunuch.
But
that's a raise. That's a promotion. So he asks Veer to write a letter of consent, and Rock has Guy Veer lie on the kitchen table as Nurse Gabrielle fetches the instruments, an elastic band, razor blade, magnifying glass, pair of tweezers, and the ethanol. The operation was painless, and the testicles were discarded in a Kleenex.
Huh.
Although his scrotum bled for a week, Gabrielle gave him a new saltwater compress every 20 minutes and ensured he got plenty of iron in his diet. On the other hand, Rock felt now that Guy Veer was a security risk because he could go tell. So he enjoys tormenting him, beating him, and playing games in which he would instruct his followers to stab him through the chest only to call them off at the last minute and would like laugh about how close they came.
Yeah, you're a madman. Like, we have no, like, structure here. We're running on the whim of a madman.
Yeah. On November 5th, Guy escaped to the village of St. Georges, where he told the villagers that a baby had died after being kicked by a horse. The police raid the compound and arrest Rock and Samuel's parents and relocated the seven children to foster homes. They found Samuel's remains, and the commune members told the story of Veer beating the child to death. Mm. They also found Veer's letter of consent to the castration and even the ballots that had been used for the vote. After the coroner determined that the group was criminally responsible for the death of Samuel Guiguerre, the police made the following charges. Rock, Jacques, Maurice, Gabrielle, and Guy were all charged with criminal negligence causing bodily harm to Samuel. Claude, who had burned the body, was charged with obstruction of justice. Jacques and Maurice were charged with neglect towards their oldest daughter, who was now five. And Claude and Solange were similarly charged for their treatment of Simon, who was three. Rock and Gabrielle were also charged with bodily harm with intent to mutilate Guy Veer. All of the accused pleaded not guilty. Jacques, Maurice, Claude, Solange, and Guy were released on their own recognizance on the condition that they not return to the cabin. But Rock and Gabrielle were denied bail as they were held to be a danger to society.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the 9-month trial, during which the commune members moved to the town of New Carlisle, where the trial was held, all parties were found guilty of all charges. Maurice and Solange got 3 years probation. Jacques and Claude received 6 months in prison and 3 years probation. Guy was sentenced but later acquitted for mental incompetence and returned to the hospital.
They made the right call on their little trial. Then.
Yeah,
they were right.
Yeah.
Gabrielle was sentenced to 9 months in jail and 3 years probation. Rock was sentenced to 2 years minus a day in prison and 3 years probation to be served concurrently and was transferred to a detention center in Quebec City. The members of the group distributed themselves between four apartments in Quebec City to be near him while he was in prison. Mm. While he's in prison, he impregnates three of the women during conjugal visits. Giselle steps down as his right-hand woman, but Solange quickly fills that place. She doesn't leave, though. And he's released in February 1984.
Okay.
Is that fun?
Are we all having fun? The idea that they're going to have to totally rebuild?
And they do.
And they will, and it'll get even more horrible than ever.
Yeah, I was worried there wasn't going to be enough violence in this first half.
We had baby castration. She shrugged.
Pales in comparison.
If you had to pick a role to play in the mock trial, what would you want to be? I know.
Prosecutor?
Well, but what about your thing?
Right. So I would be like the jury foreman.
Yeah.
I thought that would be Rock, though.
Oh, maybe.
Which is strange because he was on the jury and yet they all, it was a unanimous vote.
He had to recuse himself.
I should recuse. Well, that doesn't matter. Okay. It kind of matters later when they only speak French. So like interacting with like English authorities will be weird later.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay. Well, if you're going to be alive, you should probably know English.
Oh, brother. Je kidding.
Je joke.
Je joke is so funny. Je joking.
We'll be back for part deux.
Au revoir.